Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, December 1st, 2012. This is episode 931. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TECH. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hello, hello, hello. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater and all that jazz. Hey, actually, today we're going to talk travel, too. A little later on, Johnny Jet will tell you how to get the best deals for your holiday travel online. There's some secrets in there I didn't even know about. But right now, let's get the phones going here. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you want to call and ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, get some buying advice. Tis the season, isn't it? Black Friday and all of that, and Cyber Monday this week and all of that? 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S., and we have many listeners thanks to the internet. I found that out when I was in Australia a couple weeks ago. Wow, we had a big party. About, I don't know, 150 people showed up at a pub to say hello. That was fun. In Sydney. So all over the world. And if you're outside the U.S., if you're in Sydney listening at 5 in the morning, you can, yeah, or 6 in the morning, I guess it is. You could call 8888-ASK-LEO, but do it with something like Skype or a voice over the internet, and then it won't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number. 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and really, I guess, outside the world. Our website is techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find additional information about everything I talk about, links, and after the fact, video and audio from the show as well. So you can, you know, go to a specific question, hear the question, hear my answer, see the, not exactly transcript, but the notes from the answer with all the links. And then, with any luck, people will comment too. Well, they'll add their input, put their 2 cents on there. That's Tech Guy Labs.com. Our esteemed morning guy in Los Angeles, Bill Handel, I become his unofficial tech advisor. Actually, it's really his wife, Marjorie. You know, Handel on the Law, you've heard him. And in Los Angeles every morning, Monday through Friday on KFI. His wife, Marjorie, loves this stuff. And they're about to go on a trip to Southeast Asia. And she's trying to decide iPad or iPad mini. Now, when I get calls like that, I have to say I often want to just say, well, you know, that's kind of personal, kind of a personal question. You have to go and try it. The current iPad 4 is a beautiful device with a very high quality screen. Apple's marketing calls it the Retina display. When Apple first came out with that, it was kind of, they had it all themselves. Now, pretty much every new phone seems to have a display of at least that high a resolution. And actually, that was one of the kind of surprises when they released the Mini. So the regular iPad is 9.7 inches. The Mini is 7.85 inches. It's smaller. But the shock was it's not a high-res display like its big brother or even its little brother's, the iPod Touch, which has a Retina display. What do we mean by Retina? Well, I guess you'd have to ask Apple. But I think the way they've defined it is you can't see the dots on the screen at a normal usage distance, which means it's a different resolution depending on the device. A computer screen, which you're sitting at arm's length from, can be a Retina display at a lower resolution. But if you're holding the phone, the iPhone, to be Retina, the iPhone has to be a much higher resolution. And so that's what... Now, the iPhone 5 is 1,136 dots tall by 640 dots wide, and that comes out to a pixels per inch or dots per inch of 326. Okay, so that was the first Retina display. 326 dots per inch. But Apple now has added this marketing term Retina to a lot of other devices. For instance, the MacBook Pro, the 13-inch, that's 226 dots per inch. But it's a laptop, so it's a little farther from your eye. The iPad is 263 dots per inch. It's very high resolution. The regular iPad, it makes me mad. Apple just refuses to give it a name. Oh, the regular iPad. It's the iPad 4, the fourth generation, the current iPad, and then the iPad 3. But then go to the iPad mini, and you're talking 163 dots per inch. And you really can't see the number of dots per inch on the mini. You can see the pixels. It's not Retina. At its normal usage distance, you can see the pixels, which doesn't make much difference. And this is what I told Marjorie Handel. I said, it doesn't make much difference if you're playing a game, if you're using a Kindle app and you can make the text bigger. It's only on apps where you can't make the text bigger and it's small text, like the New York Times app or the Wall Street Journal app. When you're reading a newspaper, then you see it. Then you see it. And it bugs me a little bit. But at first, I have to say, I said it on this show, I was a little bit unhappy. But now, having spent some time with it, I got used to it. I got used to it. Now, she didn't ask me about the Nexus 7. Which I kind of wish she had. 215 dots per inch, pretty high resolution, but $200 for a comparable device. But see, if you care about the price, that's a good deal. But you'll be using Android. I like Android, but I think she really wanted an Apple device, so I didn't even bring that up. You got to be careful, right? You got to mention. You got to tell people what they want to hear somewhat. There's actually a new device from Google, the Nexus 10, I think. Is that what we call it? It's ridiculously high resolution. The Nexus 10 tablet, 2560 by 1600. It's for a 10-inch tablet, that resolution is 50% more than the iPad. And here's the interesting point. It doesn't matter. Past a certain point, if you don't see the dots, you don't see the dots. So, and all the extra dots do is slow the thing down. So I don't know if you really have to worry too much. Now, there's a new phone. As long as we're talking displays, I'll throw in one more thing. There's a new phone, the HTC DNA. This just came out on Android. And it's a 1080p 5-inch screen. It may, in fact, be the highest screen resolution of any device out there at all. So Nexus 4 phone from Google is 320 pixels per inch. The iPhone is 326 pixels per inch. But at 1920 by 1080, the DNA is 440 pixels per inch. Wow. That's crazy talk. Does it make a difference? No. It, you know, on any of those, the Nexus 4, the HTC One or 8X, the Apple iPhone 5, they're all Retina displays in the sense that you can't see the dots at a normal operating distance, and that's all that matters. More is unused, is wasted. So you might, this is going to be, we fall for numbers. Numbers are easy, right? Numbers are easy to comprehend. So for a long time, remember the megahertz myth? You were looking at how many megahertz, now gigahertz, your computer could do. That obviously, as time went by, I think people realized, it doesn't make that much difference. Past a certain point, it's all the same. And then now we're talking about nits on the screen brightness. You're hearing that, right? And dots per inch or pixels per inch. High DPI. past a certain point, none of this matters. How much RAM you have. If you have 4 or 8 gigabytes, you probably have more than enough RAM. So we're starting to, I hope, pay a little less attention to speeds and feeds. That's what they call it. Specs. A little more attention to usability, software, operating system, how it feels, how it works. That's what really matters. That's what really matters. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Hey, let's go to the phones. Get your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ding dong bang ding 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 dong bop bong dee do bo bo dee do do do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yon do do. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. We're talking high tech. I wear. Thank you, Scott. Scott Jordan from Scott Evest sends me high tech gear. So. I was at the hairdresser's yesterday. She noticed that when I took off my jacket, I had like 27 pockets. She said, "What is that?" I said, "Oh, that's my Scott Evest. Everything I'm wearing is Scott Evest. My shirt, my pants, my underwear even. And this is a Scott Evest jacket. I think but you know, look, it's like a standard blazer, but it's got like pockets in the pockets. That's what I like about it. And what you do is you load it up with gizmos and gadgets, and then you don't look weird at all. not in the least bit strange. Mike in New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike. Oh, you want to ask Scott Wilkinson this, huh?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and ask me, and then I'll ask Scott. Oh,
no
I know.
Problem.
Yeah, because I have an opinion too, you know.
Yes, you can.
Go ahead.
So I'm like many people and have the local cable company for my TV because that's all that's in the area.
Right.
And I got my cable bill today, and I'm just frustrated how much it is, and I'm debating switching to DirecTV or, let's just say, another dish company. And I want to know some of the pros and cons. Specifically, I want to know, you know, does it go out in storms like many people say? Is the picture quality better? You know, just...
I remember,
summary.
Yeah, and I'll ask Scott about picture quality because, of course, that's his expertise. But I remember when I had, I think it was DirecTV, it might have been Dish, it's the same, and we had a tree and it grew in front of the dish and I actually cut a hole in the tree. I remember going up in the tree and cutting, I didn't want to cut the tree down, so I just cut a hole so that the dish could aim through the tree. So
sure.
Dish has to have clear line of sight to the southern sky. Any dish, any satellite, so that it can pick up the satellite signal. And that can be impeded by a tree, a house, but also by heavy weather. It has to be pretty heavy. So that's one thing. Picture quality, in my opinion, is better on cable. They have to compress it more. And, you know, what do we have here, John? It's DirecTV, right? So I'll see some channels there see a lot of aliasing and compression, what we call compression artifacts. Those are weird things that'll happen due to overcompression. And I suspect the same happens with Dish. In most cases, because they have to compress more highly to get the number of channels onto the satellite, they do compress more than cable. And then the final thing is not really two-way. So on demand is different, is better in my opinion on cable than it is on Dish. And when I say Dish, I'm using a lowercase d, a satellite, DirecTV or Dish.
Yeah, I figure that.
Yeah, they pretty much have the same issues. You know, we're also coming into a period of solar flare activity, aren't we, John? Isn't this going to be a big next year for solar? And that will impact satellite as well. But. That having said that aside, I think that they're not. It's not horrible. You probably can live with it. But if picture quality is very important to you, if bad weather happens a lot, you're in New Jersey. It does. I think cable's going to be a more reliable solution for you. And the last thing in the world I want to do is recommend Comcast. They drive me nuts. The customer service is horrible. There's no love lost between me and Comcast. But I got to be honest. About those things. Sorry, Mike. I don't blame you. I mean, I overpay for cable TV. I really do. Cable can be impacted by some things as well. It's not perfect either. And, you know, there's outages. And, of course, there's price differences. So don't get fooled, though, by the teaser prices. They all, including cable, offer teaser prices that then come up a lot. And, you know, the Comcast has started doing something that the phone companies invented, this two-year deal. If you sign up for 2 years, you get a better deal than if you just, you know, month to month. Yeah. The future, of course, is getting good. This is what in my opinion, you want the best picture over the air. It's certainly the least compressed high def. So if you live near enough to a metro area where an antenna could give you a good, clear signal, then you have another option, which is over-the-air, high-def, plus internet. Be a cord cutter, in other words. That'll save you the most money, but you trade money for convenience. If you have a good internet feed, a lot of what you watch, you can get over the internet. This is why, by the way, that the cable companies make HBO and others check to see if you have a cable deal before they let you watch their app. HBO Go, this drives me nuts. HBO Go is a great app for the iPhone, iPad, Android. Lets you watch anything that's ever been on HBO. You know, it's like HBO on demand. It's fantastic. But the first thing you have to do is prove that you pay for HBO with a cable company. So the app is free, but you have to be buying HBO. And people have petitioned HBO. They said, we'd pay for this. We'd pay a monthly fee to you. Why don't you just let us pay you instead of paying the cable company, and then the cable company pays you? And I think in their heart of hearts, HBO would love to do that. I think any content creator would love to sell directly to their customers, their users, their viewers, their listeners. But the cable companies have them, because they give them distribution to most people, because most people aren't yet cable cord cutters, and they won't let them. They say, as Morris in the chat room is saying, the game is rigged. And it's rigged against us. I hate to say it. But Scott Wilkinson is joining us at 33 and a half after the hour. He will, I think, fill us in on his opinion. I think we've asked him this before. And I think the problem is he doesn't have wide experience of one of them. I can't remember if it's satellite or cable. So he may not have an answer. But that's my answer, and I think the chat room's pretty much agreeing with me. Laurie in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Laurie.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
Good. Well, hey, I downloaded something from a site called DocStore.com. I was trying to get income tax documents, and once I did that, everything went haywire on my computer. All of a sudden, I could not open Word, Excel, or Publisher, nor could I attach files. I'd click on the icon, and it would just disappear. And then I'd use Internet Explorer, and then I'd be on the computer, and then it said it couldn't find the server.
Did you get a pop-up that said, oh, you've got a problem, if you pay us $40, we'll fix it?
No.
No, okay. There's a very common virus, or a number of viruses that blackmail you that way. They make your computer stop working and then say, oh, by the way, we can fix that for a small amount of money.
Luckily, that didn't happen. So I've never.
So it may have just been a coincidence. What is tell me about DocStore. How do you spell that?
DocStock.com.
DocStock.com.
Right.
Okay.
And so
hold on. Let me look into this a little bit here. Oh, hold on. We're going to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like that song. Scott Wilkinson will join us in a bit. Just a second, in fact. I'm going to ask him about that satellite versus cable. Satellite. We finally got to that, Kyle. We had to play that whole intro to get to that one word. Satellite. Tonight. But we were talking with Lori, who's got a little bit of a problem. Now, DocStock, I'm looking at it, is fine.
Okay.
But I will tell you that it's not impossible. In fact, it happens all the time. It just happened this week. We heard about it being a problem with sites hosted by GoDaddy. But it can happen with a lot of different sites, where if the site gets hacked One of the things a bad guy does, you know, sometimes a bad guy is to face the site and everybody knows it was hacked. That's when they're doing it for the glory. When they're doing it for the money, what they'll sometimes do is put malware on the website so that anybody visiting the website who has certain vulnerabilities on their computer can get infected. One of the common vulnerabilities, by the way, is introduced by Adobe's PDF reader, Acrobat and Adobe Reader. They have, many had in the past, you know, they patch it regularly, and to my knowledge, it's currently fixed, but in the past, they've had problems where a intentionally malformed, a carefully crafted PDF file, the kind of file you downloaded from DocStock, can infect your system. So it's possible. DocStock is reliable and you know, a good system. I'm just looking at it. They're fine. But it's possible that the site you went to, you said DocStock with a K?
No, with a C.
Yeah.
D-O-C-K-S.
Yeah. I'm looking at it, and it's reliable, and it's, you know, they're a legit site. So they're fine, but it's conceivable they were hacked, or it's conceivable that somehow a PDF, a malformed PDF got put up there and infected you. Now, or it's also possible that it's coincidental and that something went wrong on your system. But I see here that you told our call screener there's a new search bar on your browser.
There is also a new search bar, and I can't figure out what it is. One of my tech guys, I gave him access to my computer, and he didn't know what it was. It has the primary colors, like Google.
I don't need to know. I don't need to hear what it is.
Okay.
The fact that that something's on there is a really, really, really bad sign.
Right.
And your, quote, tech guy should have known that immediately.
How can I get rid of it? He couldn't figure it out how to get rid of it.
You need a better tech guy. So you can't get rid of it. The problem is you might be able to get rid of that. That's a symptom. You might even get something working okay and think you're okay and blithely wander on, and you might still have something bad on there.
Exactly.
So do you use this for work? It sounds like you do.
I do.
And you have documents on there that you might want to keep private and protect?
Yeah, I'm a real estate agent, so
this is extremely serious, and you need a better tech guy, because you don't want, for instance, I bet you have documents on there with people's financial records.
Yeah.
You have a fiduciary responsibility to them to protect them. So this is very, very serious. That computer should not be put on online again. And you should find a tech guy who knows how to fix it and he will, by the way, nuke it. He will take your data off. He will then erase everything that's on the drive. It's the only way to make sure that system's okay, and reinstall Windows on there. He will then update Windows to the latest version. Have you been doing that on a regular basis?
Well, I thought I had, but he said I hadn't been doing that, but I thought I was doing that every couple weeks or so. I go in and update everything, and I save everything on a flash drive. He goes, that's not saving everything. So,
yeah, maybe your tech guy's okay. That's good advice. You need to find a good tech guy who will know that this is a serious problem, that you are potentially exposing clients' most personal data to a bad guy. You need to take this offline right away and not put it back online until you fix the problem. And I don't mean like run an anti-malware program, scanned it, and said, oh, it's fixed. I mean delete everything and start over.
What's your recommendations on how an inexperienced person should find a good...
Well, that's a really good question. Because how do you vet somebody? And there's, you know... I would go to an established company that has been around for a while, and I would ask them some questions. And if what they say doesn't match exactly what I just told you, try someone else.
Okay.
Because what I'm telling you is absolutely true. But there are people who will say, oh, no, don't worry. I can run malware bytes. It'll be fine. What they're ignoring is that you have a fiduciary. You have a higher responsibility. You might even have a legal responsibility. Probably do. Because on your, and this happens a lot, you know, the state, what was it, North Carolina? 4 million Social Security numbers leaked because somebody hacked in their computers. When you have important, valuable customer financial data on your computer, you have an extremely high standard that you have to maintain. And that data should have been encrypted. Every realtor who's listening now should be getting chills right now, because I doubt many of them do this. That data should be encrypted. It should be protected. You should have absolutely every possible security on there. And anytime something like this happens, you should be very, very seriously concerned. Is it South Carolina? I want to get that state wrong. Yeah, I guess it was South Carolina.
And Leo, what would you recommend in the future, how I can encrypt, once I get this all taken care of, how do I encrypt this so it's safe in the future?
Essentially there are ways to do it. You built into Windows, there's also something called TrueCrypt, but I think you need a little consult with somebody who knows something about security, who'll set this up for you. And same thing with backup. And you need to get a tech guy who really knows what they're doing, because this is not something to take lightly, because you have financial records on there. You probably have people's socials. You probably have credit card information.
No, I don't have that. I don't have social security numbers, but I do have some.
You have applications on there, right? You have credit applications?
For some people, for leases, but not for loans. The mortgage guy does that. But I do have some people's financial statements or bank statements.
I just leased a house, and I had to give the, because they wanted to do a credit check, they had to give the realtor the social, and it makes me nervous. Because yeah. I know that they're not taking this stuff seriously. You're not alone in this, Lori. And so you have, I think somebody's got to be out there who provides this kind of service intelligently. And I feel bad. So you almost certainly got malware on there. People put malware on systems for a variety of reasons. I'm surprised you haven't got the ransom request, because that's the most common right now. In fact, I just saw a study, I think from Symantec, that there's a huge amount of money still being made by these blackmail programs. What was it, $33 million? Pardon me?
I do keep getting little pop-ups from Symantec that I could be in danger, but I don't open it because I'm just afraid to open it. It's something that pops up a couple of times when I open the turn on the computer. It says you are in danger of blah, blah, blah.
And yeah, what it's telling you is that your antivirus is not up to date. So you got to get you. I can't help you sufficiently in a 5-minute call. My strong advice is you take this extremely seriously. You find somebody good. You have you find a good security person who can help lock down this stuff, because you have a responsibility to your clients, and everybody does. And take this seriously. Take this seriously. Symantec said that this year ransomware, that's what we call this stuff, has increased hugely. They said 68,000 affected computers discovered in 1 month. One Trojan affected 500,000 computers over the course of 18 days. Gangs have stolen more than $5 million among suspecting victims. This is serious stuff. All right, we'll get to Scott right after this. Leo Laporte. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Scott Wilkinson is here. He is our home theater guy at hometheaterhi-fi.com, answers questions there, and does a podcast for my network called Home Theater Geeks every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific. It's 2, right?
2 o'clock. Yep.
2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, 200 UTC. I just do the calculation in my head every single time.
I always have a hard time with that one myself.
Well, you know, I don't even mind going to it. So I just want to reiterate this whole issue of security. Please, if you have data that's private, particularly social security numbers, addresses, birth dates, email, even email addresses, you've got that you're holding for clients, you've got to adhere to a higher standard. You have a responsibility to them to protect it, to encrypt. If you're going online with that computer, just depresses me. I don't know what to do. I was mentioning, Scott, I leased the house you stayed in. And they have to run a credit report. So you have to give them your social. There's no way around it.
And
how careful are they being with that information?
They're so proud because they gave me all the documents on a CD, and I thought, this is a bad sign. Not a good sign. A bad sign. Because what happens is people go, oh, we're digital, without any attention to security or the issues involved. We're digital. And at the same time, the realtor told me, oh, yeah, we have a real problem right now because people are putting fake listings for our houses up on Craigslist, collecting the money and then disappearing. Oh, that's good news. Glad you got my social. You want to put that on Craigslist, too? So I have a feeling this goes on all the time. And if you're a bad guy, man, you're in clover. Because the data is out there. Everybody's gone digital, but without any regard to what that means and the responsibilities that entails. And so everything's just lying out there waiting to be picked. Just depressing. I'm sorry. I'm going to cheer up.
Let's cheer up, shall we?
Everybody should pay attention to that. Now, we were talking. I think we've talked about this before, but we had a caller want to know about cable versus satellite.
Yeah.
And I could tell you right now, I see a lot more compression on a satellite all the time. But now you don't have an experience of both. Is that right?
I do.
Oh, you do. Okay.
I've got Charter at my house. I have for years.
Okay.
And I used to have Dish for many years, and I switched to DirecTV, partly because I wanted to see the difference between them, if there was any. But also I wanted to get 3D Olympics way back when.
Right, that's right.
Way back in August. And I did. And in terms of picture quality between Dish and DirecTV, I don't see that much difference. The only thing that I see in terms of picture quality, which is a weird, weird thing, the commercials on Fox channels on DirecTV very often have what's called a zippering effect, in which the edges of objects look like they're zipper teeth. But it only happens on the commercials. And only on the Fox station.
That's aliasing is what we call that. Yeah. And it's a common artifact from overcompression. I'm wondering if maybe those are also, in some cases, standard definition that have been upsampled.
Could very well be.
I notice a lot on TV, a lot of, and you really see it, especially when you go to the local ads on cable, that many of them are standard definition. And so they're trying to put those up on a big screen. There's bars, but they're also soft. They just look terrible.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Another very common compression artifact is what's called macro blocking.
Yes.
Which is, the picture sort of degrades into these large blocks.
You see it particularly on solid colors, blacks, where you just have a solid black, and it should be solid black, and instead it looks like there's little boxes.
Slightly different
gray.
Shades of black.
Yeah. That's
exactly.
Artifacting also, yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah. So I don't know. What was your experience? You think there's more compression artifacting on satellite than there is on cable? Or
I suspect there probably is. I think you're right. I don't see a really big difference on high def channels, cable versus satellite. But then again, I'm watching mostly satellite these days. I've switched over to satellite.
So in other words, and this is the bottom line for somebody who's thinking to switch, you don't say, oh, God, this is terrible. I can't take it. I got to go back to cable. You don't notice a difference.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm perfectly happy with
that. That's the answer that he was looking for. Would I be unhappy with the quality? And it's not noticeable.
I'm not.
Yeah. Okay.
So, there you
That's
go.
That's good. And we have another question for you. See, you start doing fill-ins for me. And then all of a sudden, it's the Scott Wilkinson show. So let's take one from Michael in Fraser Park, California. Hi, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy with Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy.
Well, hello, Michael. Scott and Leo.
Hey.
Hey.
I bow my head in the presence of the home theater guru.
Uh-oh.
And I have a question. I have was taught by my father to be an audiophile back in the late 60s when he built his JBL Voice of the Theater speakers. And ever
Beautiful.
Since then, yes, and I've been spoiled ever since and have always had audio as my most important part of any system that I built. And I was lucky enough this year to finally build a state-of-the-art system and have most of the boxes here at home, and I'm getting ready to connect them. And I have a technical question. I purchased specifically a Panasonic 500 DVD Blu-ray player with the Burr Brown DACs,
mm-hmm.
which was supposedly the ones that gives you the highest quality audio. And my question is, do I run those out analog from my disc player into my amplifier, or should I rely on the HDMI to transport that?
Very good question. If you use HDMI, then the Burr Brown DAC or DAC or digital to analog converter will not be used. It'll be wasted money. So the only way that that's going to you're going to hear the if what the Burr Browns are doing is to run out analog and go to your receiver with analog 5.1 or 7.1. And it might be a worthy experiment, to tell you the truth. I don't think I've ever done this. To take the analog outs and connect them to your receiver and connect HDMI to your receiver as well and switch between them and see if you hear a difference. Because HDMI is perfectly good enough for me. It's fine, in fact. It's great. But there are those of the audiophile ilk who really prefer analog connections and believe that they're getting a better sound. And the only way to know for sure is to try it for yourself.
There you go. I praise your dad for making the right choice
and
teaching you
care.
Because you know what? It's actually the fact. Audio is more, even on a beautiful movie. But anytime, Skype is a good example. As long as the audio is okay, you could take a lower frame rate or even some artifacts in the picture. But if the audio is bad, forget it. It's just going to drive you crazy.
Yep.
I think dad was right. All right, Scott, you have put your thinking cap on. Let's answer some questions from your fans.
Well, to tell you the truth, there is one other thing I really wanted to let everybody know about.
Okay, yeah.
I saw Thursday night.
Hang on. We'll find out what Scott saw. Was it a movie?
No. Well, yes, but something else too. Really.
All right, stay tuned. We'll have more with Scott in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. I kept Scott Wilkinson over for a little bit, our home theater guy, talk about a couple more things because there's a big question I have for him. And he has seen the future, and he wanted to tell us about it. Hey, Scott.
Well,
so you saw the new... Now, so Sony is the first company to be selling a consumer 4K television.
Correct. There are four companies working on it. Sony, JVC, LG, and Runco, I believe, all using the same panel from LG.
So what is 4K?
4K is four times the resolution of HD, of 1080p. It's roughly 4,000 pixels across, left to right, by 2,000 pixels up and down. And you were talking in the first hour about retina displays and whether or not you can see the pixels.
Yeah.
I looked at this thing at a distance of less than one screen height. Usually for HD, you want to be two or three screen heights back from the screen in order not to see the pixels. I was less than one screen height away from the screen, and I couldn't see the pixels.
Hmm.
So it's very, very high density.
Yeah.
But the big news, I mean, we heard about this at Cedia, and it looked gorgeous on the show floor and everything, and they showed it to us at a palatial mansion last Thursday, and they actually are now selling it. You can buy it for a mere $25,000.
All right, but we talked about this before. This will come down.
For that money,
yeah,
you also get a 4K media server.
Well, you need one because otherwise you wouldn't have any content.
Precisely. Yeah. And this is the big news. This server will come with 10 movies preloaded and some indies and shorts and some eye candy as well, all in native 4K, this higher resolution that the TV can take advantage of. And they're going to periodically send you data discs, Blu-ray discs, but with data rather than video. And it's going to load more movies onto this server. So they have cracked the problem of where are we going to get 4K content?
Hmm.
Now, Sony has the advantage, see, because Sony is the only consumer electronics company that also is a movie studio.
Right.
So, of course, all the content is going to come from Sony Pictures, at least at first. I'm really hoping that the other studios make Blu-ray data discs that can be loaded onto this server. And that Sony will let them be loaded into the server. You know, they might say, oh, well, if it comes from Paramount or something, forget it. We're not going to let you load it. I hope that's not the case. But the fact that they are shipping with the TV a 4K server that will play 4K content and that has content on it, and they're going to keep delivering content to you, no extra charge. So yes, $25,000 is a lot up front, but you're getting a server with it. You're going to get regular updates of new content on it. So, you know, that's starting to look pretty good. And, oh, man, did it look good. Now, they didn't have it set up properly. If they had given me the control...
That's terrible. You're kidding me.
No,
is this
I'm not.
In a regular store or...
No, no, it was at a home. It was at, in fact, a $22 million mansion in Brentwood called the House of Rock.
You got to tell them you need a calibrator.
I tried, believe me. Now, they also had the Sony 4K projector in another room, and that had been calibrated, and it looked really, really good. So, you know, but even so, and all the demo material on the 4K flat panel was very bright and colorful, and, you know, so it was eye candy. And
it's that's probably, Sony really probably want. Has a deal, you know.
It could. I don't know. But anyway, the big news is that they're shipping a source, a 4K source device with the TV. So that you can actually see real 4K content.
And the future, unfortunately, is now 8K. So, okay.
Yeah.
Because in Japan, the broadcasters are not, they're skipping 4K, I guess, and going straight
going
to
8K. And going straight to 8K, right.
8K. Right. Unbelievable.
Which, again, is then 8,000 pixels across by 4,000 pixels down. You could have a wall-sized display and go right up to it
that's
and
what
never
I want.
See a pixel.
Yeah. See, that's what I want. That's called telepresence.
Yes,
where
exactly.
The display could be attached to a 4K camera that is in across the country in your grandma's house, and she could see the kids as if they're just in the next room.
Right. They're just a few feet away.
Or it could be set up at the Duomo in Florence, and you feel like you're there. And that's what I'm excited about. And I think that's going to happen in the next, I don't know, what, 10 years?
Yeah, could. Yeah, 10 years, I think, is a fairly good estimate there. Yeah.
Pretty
exactly
exciting.
Right.
So, Scott, here's what we're going to do because we're running out of time. I will defer this conversation, but we wanted to talk about The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
And where to go see it.
Yep.
Where the best place to see it will be, and we'll do that next week. How about that for a long tease? Well, it doesn't come out. It doesn't come out to the 14th, right?
So we correct. Correct. We can still talk about it.
So next week.
It'll still be ahead of time.
This is very important. This is not to be fooled around with.
No, I agree.
This is not
this is serious business.
This is serious business. This is not entertainment. We're talking serious business. You got to know where to go. And there's
I can tell you.
And I'm buying tickets ahead because I know they're going to be sold out like crazy. So I want to know. There are some theaters that are okay. There are some theaters that are great, and you want to see it in the best possible theater. How to do that? We'll talk about that when we come back next week. With Scott Wilkinson. You can listen to Scott every Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time with his Home Theater Geeks podcast. Who's coming up Monday?
I've got a couple people from one from Panamax and one from Furman. They're related companies. We're going to talk about AC power and how that affects AV, audio video performance. And those two guys are actually, they work in Petaluma. They're going to come to the Brick House and do show from the studio. So
excellent.
I'm real happy about that.
Excellent. Well, we'll tune in Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Twit.tv is the website. You can watch this live. TWIT.tv or get it after the fact. There's on-demand audio and video. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, you want to talk about tech, I can talk about home theater, of course, and digital photography, computers and the internet, cell phones too, all that jazz. But don't try to pry out of me how best to watch The Hobbit, because we're saving that for next week with Scott Wilkinson. Joe in Thomasville, Georgia, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you doing today?
I'm well, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Let me put my bottle of helium down.
Wait a minute, that's not your real voice? I thought you talked like that.
No. I've got some little helium here
see,
that I was just...
See, you thought I would go, what's wrong with you? But see, we have people who sound like that normally all the time, so I didn't pay attention to it. I just thought, well, Joe sounds like he's been taking some helium. All right, Joe, what can I do for you? No, that's the first time. I've been in radio 36 years. That's the first time anybody's ever done that to me.
Oh, cool.
You win.
I've got a Galaxy S3. And what happened?
Joe, what's wrong with your voice? It's going down so low.
Oh, it's the helium.
You need more helium. All right, you got. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Galaxy S3.
Yes, and when I run TalkBack, it will not let me scroll through the screens. And I don't know. I don't understand. Maybe whether it's the phone or we're actually on tech support with Verizon with this phone Thursday for about an hour.
They should just replace it.
Back out.
They should just replace it. So you're saying you've got TalkBack, which is the screen reader, running. And when you mean the swiping when you go from screen to screen?
Right. When I swipe, go from screen to screen.
It just won't swipe at all. Now maybe, and I don't know because I don't use TalkBack, that might be a feature somehow to protect you from an inadvertent screen touches. But the Verizon guy didn't know. Well, maybe that might make sense because maybe he's, you know, like me, not experienced with that. Let's ask the chat room. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the
squeaky tech guy. I think this has to do with the helium, doesn't it? No hula hoop.
So we were talking a little bit about something that is a problem that I hadn't heard about, using the voiceover software, that's accessibility software that comes with Android, and a Galaxy S3. He can't swipe, which seems not like a good idea. You know what I didn't think of? I should probably just try this. I should just turn it on and see what happens. Can I swipe on my... So let's turn TalkBack on. When TalkBack is on, your device provides spoken feedback to help blind and low vision users. It describes what you touch, select, and activate. I'm going to turn that on. Yes, I'll use TalkBack. It says okay. AirView and TalkBack cannot both be enabled. AirView will be disabled. All right.
Alert, enable Explore by Touch. TalkBack wants to enable Explore by Touch. When Explore by Touch is turned on.
Okay, well, enable Explore by Touch. Holy cow. Okay, yeah. Give me a tutorial, which is quite lengthy. I presume our caller went through the tutorial.
Next button.
Okay, when Explore by Touch is turned on, you can touch the screen to learn what's under your finger. All right. How do I go next, though?
Exit button. Next button.
See, now I can't get it to do anything. There we go. Maybe you have to hold a little bit. You know, it does seem to impact the performance a little bit. I will play with this more and try to figure this out.
S Planner. Next button. Now place two fingers on an item in the list. And
okay, I'm not going to do the tutorial on the air. Thank you. Okay, bye. Ooh. That could get quite annoying. Well, on the other hand, if you can't see the screen, that's like a lifesaver. That's like, wow, this is fantastic. It should be able to do everything it can do, but I wouldn't be surprised. You could see already as I'm turning it on, it says, well, I'm going to have to disable some stuff that may be incompatible. So I'll just keep playing with that. Maybe somebody will know on the chat room. If it doesn't work, and it's supposed to work, then I would just say to Verizon, look, I need a phone that this works with. It may just be a bug. Jim in Seattle, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. Wow. Good to talk to you. And just from another screen reader's point of view, user anyway, sometimes it does impact the, I guess, speed of the,
sure.
of the phone.
Sure.
So,
which phone? Do you use an iPhone, Jim? Or?
Yeah, I use an iPhone 5.
Accessibility is excellent on the iPhone, I've heard.
Over, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
does go faster. Siri does go faster without VoiceOver, though.
So that's interesting. So it's using CPU cycles to do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I've got kind of a complicated situation. I'm kind of doing some research for a buddy of mine. We're looking at a tablet, and we all do music as well, and we go to song circles, and we have lyrics. Just in Word files that we use. And I need to know a couple of things about maybe getting an iPad. These are his questions, basically. One of the things about getting an iPad, and I just put those questions in the chat room, one of the things about getting an iPad is being able to load external files onto it. And his argument, or my friend's argument, is that, you know, there are no connectors, there are no ways of loading things like thumb drive files.
Right.
Or
well, okay, so let me talk about that. You're right, and this is one of the common complaints about the iPad. Apple decided to make it simpler not to give you access to a file system. So what you're, what we're normally used to with computers is there's a file system. There's software that lets me look at the hard drive, see folders, copy files from one place to another, mount, for instance, a USB drive, copy files off of it onto the... There's no facility to do that on the iPad. It just doesn't work that way. All files are stored or owned by some application. There's no generic file storage at all. An application owns every single file that's on there. So if you want to get a file into an application, and by the way, there is no Office yet for the iPad, but there are programs that can read Office files. Let's use it as an example, Apple's own Pages, which is an excellent word processor designed for the iPad. So to get a document into Pages, you have a couple of choices. You can sync it from iTunes. So when you are using iTunes with an iPad and you go to the apps section of the iPad, you'll see a list of applications that are on the iPad that can receive files. And if it's the kind of file the application can understand, in the case of Word files and Pages, doc files and Pages, that's one, you can just, you can then on the desktop computer add it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't do that. Most people either email it to themselves. If it's in the email as an attachment and you look at the attachment, you'll see a drop down and it says open in, and then it will give you the list of applications that can open that. And so if you say open in Pages, Pages will then open with that document, and it's now part of Pages' own storage. So that's, it's
right.
Kind of a weird way. Now there's a nice little exception here, and it's a thing called Dropbox.
Yeah, I was going to just mention Dropbox because I was telling him that I could.
So hold on, turn the voice, go away, voiceover. Okay, it's talking to me. I shouldn't have flipped my phone over. So Dropbox is a different beast, it seems, because Dropbox has its own storage as an application on the iPad, but it puts in there anything that you have on your Dropbox and your desktop. So if you put a bunch of Word folders in your Dropbox and your desktop, it will then be visible in Dropbox on the iPad, and then you can select them and say open in Pages, and now it's part of Pages.
I see.
So that's, for most people, that's, I think, the easiest way to do it.
And the other question that he would have is, he has a camera and he has a digital recorder, and you know he would want to upload either his pictures and see them on a bigger screen,
right,
or upload his audio files onto the iPad,
right,
and listen to them there.
You can use Dropbox for that as well. There's an excellent photo program for the iPad that actually there's several, but there's one that I really love from Apple called iPhoto. And iPhoto for the iPad will support the camera connection kit. So for an additional $40, I think it is, you can get a camera connection kit that reads SD cards.
Okay.
And when you put an SD card in and it connects via the Lightning connector, then iPhoto will launch and say, do you want me to import these photos? Remember, and this is the big change that your friend has to understand, with an iPad, there's no generic file storage, no file system. Every file has to belong to an app. Now, an app can send the file to another app, just as Dropbox can send the photo over to iPhoto. So Dropbox is kind of a nice way to get that working.
My final question deals with scrolling. Is there anything that will allow for being able to read hands-free, maybe like with a foot pedal or things like that? You can use it on stage?
There are teleprompter programs for the iPad that support a variety of different input devices, including automatic, you know, timed. But we actually use iPads for teleprompters all the time, and I think that they do support foot pedals, Jim. So you just have to look at the specialized teleprompter software for the iPad. Thanks for the call. Good questions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Frank is in Palm Desert, California, our next caller. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm one of your 78-year-old geezer trying to keep up with the world of technology, and if I miss one of your shows, I'm about 6 months behind. So
it does move. It feels like it's moving 6 months every day, doesn't it? It feels that way.
For an old guy, it's kind of tremendous. Anyway, about 6 months ago, in my quest to keep up, I bought an iPhone 4S. And my first trip out of the country, a young lady told me about this app called WhatsApp. It's one word, WhatsApp.
Yeah, I use it. Love it.
Oh, great. I emailed my daughter, who lives in Ventura, and I was in Easter Island. I emailed her and told her to sign up for it. I think it's like 99 cents or something. And we started using it, and I guess it was free. I didn't see any bump on my data plan or anything that I'd purchased for an overseas use. But now recently, I was out of the country again, and I didn't buy it. I mean, I relate to inches, yards, and miles, but I don't relate to kilobytes, megabytes, and gigabytes. Last week, you were talking to somebody who came home with a horrendous data bill, which
yeah.
I did myself.
So WhatsApp does use data instead. Where it saves you money is it's essentially text messaging, but instead of using the carrier's text, expensive text plans, the SMS plans, it uses data only. And by the way, there are lots of these. I would say WhatsApp is threatened mostly by the absolutely free Facebook Messenger. I bet you and your daughter are both on Facebook, and Facebook has a standalone messenger program that works just like WhatsApp, but it's free.
Okay.
There's a lot of these. I can go on and on. There's literally dozens of these data-based text programs. Apple, actually, if your daughter's on an iPhone as well, Apple's own messages program will use data. If it can't get a text message out, it will do data. So
I'm talking about overseas now. One of them.
Yeah. So data's data. The thing is, text data is very tiny. This is why SMS messaging is so expensive and shouldn't be so expensive, is because it's just, at best, if you use all 160 bytes in a text message, that's 160 bytes. You know, 1,000 text messages is a megabyte, right? So it's not a lot of data. So that's probably why you didn't notice a blip. There might have been a blip. I mean, maybe you and your daughter sent 1,000 messages.
I ran up this horrendous bill. I was out of country for 2.5 weeks, but what I was doing, it was going in an election. I was streaming KFI radio to keep up.
Yeah, that'll cost you. Oh, man, you did that? Oh, Frank,
yeah,
how big was your bill?
$400, close to $700.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry. Did you know that was going to happen?
No, I told you. I don't. Really, I bought a plan that gave me, I think, 800 megabytes.
Ah.
But at the phone store said that 1 hour of streaming radio will take about 100
right.
megabytes.
Right. So you got 8 hours. You bought, for $250, I might add, you bought 8 hours of radio. But then you listened probably to another 8 hours. That election, I don't blame you. I was on out of the country, too. I wasn't in the Eastern Islands, but I was in the South Pacific during the election.
Right.
And it was driving me nuts because we're so used to being always on, aren't we?
Right, exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, I stayed on, but it cost me.
Well, what you might do is call it. It's AT&T.
Yeah, they reduced it.
Exactly. Good. Yeah, that's what I would do. Just call them. Throw yourself at the mercy of the court. Say, I'm 78 years old, and I just figured out how to push a button. And
anyway, ask you now, what I was doing is using my plan. Now, if I had used Wi-Fi where it was available,
cost you nothing.
It doesn't matter.
Cost you nothing. So this is the trick when you travel overseas. You did the right thing. You went to AT&T and you bought, as I did, the 800 megabyte plan. Now, the first thing you got to do is you reset your data use. As soon as you step out of the country, reset your data usage on your phone so you can monitor this. It's in the settings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me.
Yeah. If you look in settings, it's settings about, and right at the bottom, it's cellular and cellular usage, and you can see exactly how many megabytes you've used. Now, AT&T will tell you, well, you know, that's the phone's guess. It doesn't necessarily jibe with ours, but it's usually pretty close.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's, you know, so and they understand that this is hard to track. So if you say, you know, I monitored it and that was at 700 megabytes, but you say this, I did this, by the way, but you said I used 18 gigabytes. That's a mistake. And then they'll usually deal with you. So you monitor it and then use Wi-Fi whenever you can, because Wi-Fi's cost you nothing, only cost you whatever the Wi-Fi costs you.
I was lazy because in order to use Wi-Fi in most of these hotels, you got to go sit in the lobby.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important with an iPhone, and this is true somewhat of all smartphones, to be very careful about what other applications are using the internet without your knowledge. For instance, your email package is probably going out and checking email every few minutes. That's data.
Yeah.
So you want to set that to manual, turn off push. You got to look through all the things that might use data and turn them off. Or do what I did to be safe is I would turn off data roaming. That's what that's called, data roaming. Turn that off. Yeah, that means if you really want to be safe, turn off all cellular data. But even just turning off data roaming will be fine, because what that says is don't use the foreign services. When I'm out of the country, don't use them. So just turn it off when you're on Wi-Fi or you're not, and then turn it on as needed. That way, there's no accidental dripping.
I was with a lot of other old folks, and I was showing off like gangbusters.
It's great to know, and you know everybody wants to know this.
Yeah,
I'm. Well, no, you're not, Frank. Frank, please, I got to train you out of that. Not your fault. Not your fault. This is crazy stuff. And when I believe me, I've had a giant data bill as well. And this is one of the things I talk a lot about. You really got to be careful when you're traveling. There is another option that you can often do, which is if you know you're going to be in one place for a while, say the Easter Islands, is to inquire whether you can get a SIM card from that spot. Often, buying data locally is really cheap.
Right.
And then
I've read up on that, but I move around on these trips. I'm moving.
Me too. I go on cruises, so I'm in a different country every day, so that's no good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay, Leo, thank you so much. What a real help. And I'll do all these. I'm leaving again on a riverboat trip to Europe in March.
Oh, you're going to have so much fun. See, now, if you're in Europe, sometimes you can get a plan that will let you go cross country. I'd inquire about that. But then you lose your local phone number. So, that's kind of a disadvantage. You're going to have a European number when you do that.
You were talking about that a couple weeks ago. I caught that, yeah.
The other thing I would try maybe is sometimes you get a Wi-Fi card with 3G or 4G data inexpensively. It was a fella, Jim Huffnagel, who was so proud of this on our cruise. He said, well, Leo, you know what I did? We got to Sydney, and now Jim's like you, Frank. He's retired. He has lots of time, so he loves to travel, so he's become an expert on this. He said, when I got to Sydney, I bought a Wi-Fi card from the Australian authorities, $80 for 2 months, unlimited data, $80. So he's happily chatting on his Wi-Fi. I'm angry as heck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, $80. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I have to think the carriers are not thrilled about software like WhatsApp or Apple's own Messages program or Facebook Messenger, BlackBerry Messenger. All of these are text messaging systems that bypass the carrier's expensive SMS text messages and instead use the carrier's relatively less expensive data. So, and I like WhatsApp. It's a great app for that. You could have group chats. You could send photos, videos, audio, share your location, send a map. So it's more than just plain text. It's kind of, it's really more the MMS. And it works across all phones. On the other hand, you know, Facebook, it isn't completely free. I think you pay $1 a year or something. But Facebook's is absolutely free. And I suspect but now you have to be a member of Facebook. But at this point, is there anybody who's not on Facebook? Coming up, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Website, techguylabs.com. Coming up, 33 and a third after the hour, Johnny Jett, my old buddy, our travel wizard, is going to explain how to get inexpensive travel online just in time for the holiday trips you're planning. But let's go to line four right now. Robert's in Tustin, California. Hey, Robert, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing this afternoon?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
All right. My question is, I have a network-attached storage from Buffalo Tech. It just did a random reboot on me this morning while I was watching you, and I want to know how hard it would be to take the hard drives out of it, or in currently a RAID 0, stick them into my Windows 8 machine, and back everything up to another hard drive.
So let me explain what
the language Robert was just talking in. It's called Geek.
So Robert has a network-attached storage. What that is basically a computer that doesn't have a screen, mouse, or keyboard. It just attaches to the network. And in fact, mostly what it does is it's just a giant storage device attached to your network. Great for backups across the whole network if you have multiple machines, or for putting all your video files on to play as a media server. You can do that with audio and photos too. That's typically how people use these. Now, your Buffalo, which is the manufacturer, Buffalo makes a very nice network-attached storage, probably has, is it two or four drives in it?
It's two drives, two 500 gigs.
Right. And most network-attached storage will do this. They'll have multiple drives, and then they'll use a technique called RAID, redundant array of inexpensive disks. They'll use RAID to make those multiple drives look like a single drive. And they do it for a number of reasons. RAID can be used in RAID 0 to speed things up. They call that striping. It can also be used as RAID 1, RAID level 1, which is mirroring. And that is where the drives are duplicates. One fails, you got the other one. There's a RAID 5. Most network-attached storage uses RAID 5 or higher. That RAID 5 is a great choice because it brings all the drives together but takes a certain part of the total and sets it aside as backup. And so RAID 5, you can lose any one drive. Usually takes four drives to do it or more. You can lose any one drive and put another drive in, and it'll rebuild itself, and you haven't lost any data. So it's a great way to kind of make your data more reliable. So you were using two drives in a RAID 0 in a striped system. Now, that's risky because if it's something like this happens, you've got to get it into another RAID 0 device before you can read those drives. Those drives are not individually readable.
Right.
You have to recreate the RAID.
Okay.
And that's going to be problematic. I mean, the best way to do this would be get a duplicate Buffalo, put them in there, hope that the problem is the Buffalo, not the drives.
Yeah, it's not the drives. As a matter of fact, I've been checking the smart status, which, in my opinion, is not very smart.
Yes, I've always said that.
It was the control, the logic board controlling the whole thing that did it.
Good news. I don't like RAID 0 because it's fragile. You know, the only way now you can get your data off those drives is to recreate the RAID. You probably can't do that with your own computer and software RAID. You might be able to.
Actually, my motherboard does support physical RAIDs.
Okay. Okay, it's possible you can. It depends on if the Buffalo's just a really vanilla RAID 0 or if they're doing anything additional.
XFS file system, I think, and that's about it.
Yeah. So it's possible you'll have to tell your motherboard, okay, these two drives are a RAID 0 array, and then look at it and see.
Okay.
I'm looking to see if the chat room has any ideas. Often, these guys aren't doing kind of standard RAID. You really need a second Buffalo to duplicate it.
Yeah, and I was debug one in the chat's actually saying that RAID 5 requires three drives.
Yeah, minimum of three.
Yeah.
But it can obviously use more.
Right.
So this is not RAID 5. This is RAID 0.
It's a RAID 0. I don't think mine can actually support RAID 5.
Oh, no, I'm sure it can't. No, I'm not.
No, that thing's about,
when you get a two-drive network-attached storage, it's going to be RAID 0. You might get one that does RAID 1 or RAID 0 plus 1, but the problem is then you're going to get half the capacity. And the reason they put two drives in there is so they can say this is a terabyte hard drive or a two-terabyte hard drive. So that's almost certainly going to be capable of either 0 or 1, and very seldom will people use 1 because it cuts the capacity. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with RAID 0 as long as you understand that it's less robust. The two drives together are less robust than a single drive because all it takes is a failure on either of those drives and the whole thing's gone. So it doubles your chance of failure, basically. So if you back it up or whatever, treat it like a fragile hard drive, that's fine. The issue here, Robert, is how do I get that drive, assuming those two drives are fine, how do I see them? You should try it with your motherboard, see if it works. I don't think that'll damage anything. Don't tell it to rebuild the RAID. I'm a little nervous about that. You could potentially erase everything on there. The safest thing to do would be to get a duplicate Buffalo, put them in there, and turn it on, see what happens. PC Guy is mentioning, and I know since you're in the chat room, you're probably seeing it, that runtime.org has some NAS recovery software that might help. But the thing to understand, if you have a storage solution that has two drives in it, it's called Scary RAID. The potential for failure goes up now, right? Because only one drive has to fail, and you've got two drives. So only one has to fail, and the whole thing is shot. All right, now we go to Chuck in Kansas City. Everything's up to date in Kansas. Hello, Chuck.
Hi, Leo. I'd like to take just a second to say thank you for the invaluable, not only thank you for the invaluable service you provide, but the personable manner in which you do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You, sir, are truly a great American.
I just have a great job. I'm just the luckiest guy in the world. That's all. What can I do for you?
We're lucky.
Oh, thank you. That's nice.
I'm a truck driver, and I have a Motorola Droid 2, or I believe it's a Droid 2, that when I was with another service, and I assisted...
Chuck, we're running out of time. Let me just tell you, you can continue to use that exact... The only thing you'll lose is if you take out that SIM card is phone service. All the apps should run as long as you've got internet access. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know about GoToMeeting. Have you used GoToMeeting yet? You got to try it. GoToMeeting.com. You can try it free for 30 days if you use our offer code TECH, T-E-C-H. It says Tech Guy here. Let me see what it says on the... I think it's Tech Guy. Tech, not Tech Guy. Let me just delete that there. Hey, Lisa, did they change, did GoToMeeting change their offer code? Because the lower third is not in code. Pardon me? I think it's tech. It says tech everywhere. So the idea of GoToMeeting is it's screen sharing, Mac or PC, to Mac or PC, or iPad, iPhone, and Android, which is really sweet. And now... You can also use your camera. For instance, on iOS, it'll use the iPad camera and iPad microphone. So you can attend a meeting with video from anywhere. If you've got a camera on your laptop or desktop, your clients do as well. Awesomeness. Just awesomeness. Because not only are you now screen sharing, but you're seeing them in high def video. They call it HD Faces. It's really sweet. Look, that's how it looks. And it really is good video. And if you have an iPad, it'll use the camera right off the iPad. You can also present from an iPad now. That's new. I love Citrix. They are always adding features to their stuff. It's fantastic. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. The promo code is TECH. Then download the free iPad app and hold a meeting. Hold a meeting. You'll love it. GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Promo code is TECH. 30 days free of GoToMeeting. We don't, you know, when we throw meetings now, we just use GoToMeeting because it's kind of automatic. And that way, if you need to share stuff or, show somebody, it's just there. And we just use, they have a VoIP, VoIP and teleconference bridge for part of the deal. So, it's easy. You start it from your email. Just couldn't be better. GoToMeeting.com. And if you're in Norway, and you got 30 megabits up, that video is going to be spectacular. You don't have to be, though. Not required. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is my number. This is the number to call if you want to ask tech questions about computers or the internet or smartphones. Or home theater, digital photography, and coming up in about half an hour, my buddy Johnny Jett is going to talk about how to use the internet to get great travel deals. In fact, I'm going to ask him also, because I guess he was on the 787, the new 787 Dreamliner yesterday. And I'm just going to ask him about that, too. We're trying to get a tour of the new Airbus. What is that? The 380? What do they call it? The big giant. It's like a living room on wings. That giant plane. I'm trying to get a video tour of that, too. The tech in these new planes is kind of amazing. So A380, thank you. Thank you, Rock Law. So I guess computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, or high-tech airplanes. 8888 ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Grant in Lake Forest, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hi, Grant.
So my phone is pretty terrible, and I don't really use it a whole lot. My question is, if I'm looking at buying a tablet, and if there's any application that could go on a tablet that would make it operate as my phone.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, there is.
I could have my phone number and everything.
Yeah. So some tablets, you can actually put a SIM card in. And that's a really interesting idea because that makes it an actual phone, a cell phone. So I think the Galaxy Tabs, the 7 and the 10-inch, I believe take SIM cards. So you would treat them as unlocked phones, go to AT. Now, a SIM card means it's GSM, so you'd have to go to AT&T or T-Mobile and get a SIM for that. So that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is to use Skype. Oh, the Nexus 7 has a SIM slot now? That might be my top choice. The nice thing about a 7-inch tablet is it's a tablet, but it's small enough that you can kind of carry it around. So you could actually practically use it as a phone. The Nexus 7 is from Google. Now, remember, when you ask about it, that there has to be a SIM card for voice service, not just data, but for voice service, okay? So I would check to see if it supports voice service. The other way to do this would be to put software on there, VoIP software on there, like Skype or Tango or something like that, that lets you make outbound phone calls. Skype, if you pay an additional fee, supports Skype out and Skype in, and turns it into a telephone. This probably is the easiest way to do it. Or even Google Voice actually might work for that. Let's stick with Skype because it's easiest. So you pay Skype for Skype out, which means now using your tablet and the Skype application on your tablet, you can call any phone in the world. And it's very low-cost international calls as well. A lot of people do it for that. And then Skype in means that you get a real landline-style number, 707-555-1212, whatever it is. And when people call that number, it rings your Skype. So that seems like a good way to go as well. I don't know if they sell tablets in the U.S. with voice SIM cards. This may not be in the U.S.
By that, you mean like even if you were to buy that type of tablet, it would have the SIM card?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, well, if you buy, for instance, if you're in Europe and you buy a Galaxy Note 10, it has a voice. It has a slot for a voice SIM card, not just data, but voice. You put it in there, and it has a dialing app and everything. It's just like a ginormous cell phone. Looks a little silly holding up to your head. But that now I use my phone of choice, as you probably heard me mention, is the Galaxy Note 2. It's a phone, but it's five. It's big. I still have that voiceover stuff turned on, the talk over stuff. But it's 5.5 inches, so it's kind of like a small tablet and a phone.
Right.
So there are lots of choices.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think that's an interesting application. And at first, when somebody told me they were doing this, I thought, well, what, you nuts? But the truth is, I don't know about you, but I use my smartphone much more as a computer than as a telephone. I use it for texting. Probably that's the number one way I communicate with it, texting. I use it for email. I use it to play games. I use it to read news. I use it to do social media like Facebook and Path and Pair and all that stuff. I love it. And then occasionally I'll make a phone call on it. So I think it's kind of sensible to use it that way. Now, a tablet, 7-inch is probably you wouldn't, a 10-inch tablet's going to be hard to carry around. And you're probably going to want to get earbuds or some sort of headset so you don't have to actually hold it to the side of your head. That would be a little weird. But the advantage of using Skype is that you could also do video calls to people you're calling who have Skype on that end. Good question, Grant. Thank you. Don is in Lake Forest, California. Don, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You should be so proud of me. I finally made the jump from Apple to Android.
Ah.
I bought my first Android phone a couple of weeks ago, and I just love it.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. It always makes me nervous when people blame me for transferring them over to a new platform. I'm afraid they're going to go, and I hate it. So you do like Android, huh?
I do. I bought the Galaxy Note 2, and I just love it.
Yeah, now, see, that's what I was just talking about. It's a lot of people mock me for this phone because it's so big. But I love it because it's big enough for me to read and use, and I can type on it. I had a hard time typing on the iPhone, to be honest. My fingers are too fat.
It's like anything else. Once you get used to it, I mean, now that I've had it for a couple of weeks,
it's not that big.
You have to get over that. Just real quick story. I was at a social gathering last night, and there's all these people. You know, when you're sitting at a table, everybody's texting and Facebooking. And I pulled my phone out, not even thinking about it. I put it on the table, and there was like a swarm of bees. Everybody wanted to play with my phone.
Well, that is what you want, isn't it? When you pull out a phone, you want everybody to say, ooh, what's that? I've not seen that. But I think people are very interested in this Galaxy. You know, they've sold, was it 10 million? They've sold a lot of them.
It's a beautiful phone.
Yeah. Great screen.
Great screen, and it's fast. It's smooth. I have a lot of downtime sometimes at work, and where I could watch movies or just watch the news on the phone. And like you said, it's a phablet. It's beautiful.
Well, good. Well, what can I do to help you then?
Okay, so learning Android, you know, having an iPhone all these years, Google Play. I'm moving my music from iTunes to Google Play. And I think this question might have came up. I think you might have answered it a few weeks ago. But it seems that when you move your music from iTunes to Google Play, I guess there's some type of security on some of the music where it has some type of setting. So all of my music didn't go into my Google Play account. Is there something I need to do?
Yes.
To get
copy protection. I hate copy. So if the music is unprotected, you ripped it yourself or you bought it in the last year or two on iTunes because they've stopped doing this, then it's no problem. You can play it back on your Android phone just fine. And I mentioned a program called Double Twist, which acts just like iTunes to sync it up and everything. You could do it over Wi-Fi. All of that's straightforward. But the copy protection will stop it. So what you have to do is get rid of the D. It's called DRM, Digital Rights Management, because they don't want to say copy protection, but that's what it is.
Okay.
Now, the easiest way to do this is to turn on iTunes Match once. It's $25 a year, but you only need to do it once and match all those copy-protected songs. Once you've done that, and the reason they're copy-protected, they're from iTunes, so they're guaranteed to match. Once you've done that, delete the copy-protected songs and re-download them from Match. And lo and behold, the new versions will be higher quality and unprotected. And at that point, don't pay for Match ever again. You're done. And you can put them on your Android phone. You can transport them around easy. Girls just like spoon mugs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. You got a question, a comment, a suggestion. You like the music, you know, you got to love Kyle Benham. He's our musical director. He picks all those songs and he puts a playlist out at the end of the day with all of the songs on there on his Google Plus page. He's the last guy using Google Plus. It's kind of nice, Kyle. Your loyalty there. That's great. Kyle space Benham. It's the future, he says. Well, maybe. Maybe. Google certainly. Isn't that interesting that, here Google comes along and says, we got to do social. Last year, the bonuses of Google employees were tied to the success Google had in social. This is what Larry Page, the new CEO, told employees. He said, your bonus, whatever division you're in, doesn't matter. Your bonus is directly tied to how well we do social. And they said this is search is our business. Well, actually, their business is selling ads, right? So first of all, Google's very clear about their business. We think of them as a search engine. But it's obvious now that they're much more than a search engine. They say, we make money as long as you just use the internet more, we'll make money. The reason being, the more you use the internet, the more you see Google ads, the more you click on Google ads, the more you use Google's browsers or Android to use, to search, the more money they make. So they don't care. They don't care if you use an iPhone. A lot of people think, oh, yeah, Google just wants you to use Android. No, they make no money. They don't charge for Android. They make no money on Android. They make money when you use Android. And they make the same amount of money when you use an iPhone. It doesn't matter to them. So they're perfectly happy. Just use the internet. That's all we ask. Use it every day. So they created Google Plus. They thought, well, you know, Facebook, Twitter, we see this. We think we have a better way of doing this. We're going to create our own social network, Google Plus. And not only that, we're going to put all our mighty might behind it. In fact, now when you go to Google, you get a Google bar that has your plus page right there in the top left. And, you know, and then when you sign up for Gmail, they say, do you want to join Google Plus? Sure you do. And that's why they've got hundreds of millions of users. But are people posting there? And it's interesting. It just shows you can throw all your weight, all your might as a big corporation behind something. And if people don't get excited about it, it doesn't matter. And apparently, people are just happy with Facebook. That's it. My friend Mike Elgin, who is a big Google Plus supporter, I might add, and tech writer, Mike is of the opinion that Facebook has a monopoly, that's why Google can't succeed. He says, what is a monopoly? Monopoly is when people have to use a product, they can't go anywhere else. He points out that most of the people, when you ask them, in polls and surveys, most people say, no, I hate Facebook, but I have to use it because all my friends and family are there. Is that the case for you? Do you use Facebook even though you'd really... I think the truth is most people like Facebook. I like Facebook. I don't mind using Facebook. I think many of us are a little concerned about Facebook. You know, they're changing their privacy policy again. They just turned on a feature which makes me very nervous. If you use Android or iPhone and you use Facebook on those portable devices... Notice, next time you use the Facebook app, it's going to say to you, oh, we got a new feature. Every picture you take on the phone can be uploaded to Facebook servers. What do you say? Now, Google Plus did this, by the way. If you use an Android phone and you put the Google Plus app on there, it'll say, hey, we can always upload all the pictures to Google. They say private. Don't worry. They're private. iPhone does that. It's called PhotoStream. If you turn it on, all the photos you take on your iPhone automatically upload. I mean, it's clear that people want this. Why? I don't want to have to... tell it to upload pictures. Just upload everything. And then you go to your Facebook page and you say, yeah, that's a good one. Make that public. They're all supposedly, and this is what makes me nervous, supposedly everything you upload to Facebook is private unless you make it public. All those pictures. So how do you feel about that? Every picture you take uploaded to Facebook. And it's private. Don't worry. Except a couple of years ago, remember Facebook changed their settings and all your private pictures were published. Even Mark Zuckerberg, the guy who started Facebook, had private pictures on his Facebook page that were visible only to friends and family that were visible to the public when they changed this. We know that he didn't want that because within hours he'd made them private again. But for a while, Mark Zuckerberg's private pictures were public. And if Mark Zuckerberg can't figure it out, I don't know how I'm supposed to figure it out. So it's something to consider. It's really a good idea to upload every photo you take with your camera phone to Facebook. Even though Facebook says they're private, will they stay private? I don't know. Do you trust Facebook with your private pictures? Do you trust Google with your private pictures? I always say, and I think this holds true here, if you put it on Facebook, you should consider that it's public. Even if you've said it carefully not to be, there's no guarantee that it will stay that way, that it will stay private. Don't put anything on. In fact, this is really the rule. Don't put anything on the internet that you wouldn't want your mom, your dad, your teacher, your employer now, or your future employer to see. Because there's no guarantee that will stay that way. There's no. In fact, history tells us it very, very possibly won't. Paul in Toledo, Ohio. Hello, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Great. I remember, but you probably won't. About a year ago, this time, you helped me pick out some iPhone 4Ss for my daughter.
Oh, that's great. Do they like them?
Oh, yes. They love it. Well, they're real fangirls of Apple.
Excellent.
I have a Galaxy S2 myself, but I'm here asking you some more advice.
It's all about choice, isn't it?
Right. I know that you've had Onkyo stereo receivers in the past. In fact, there was one back around August, I think, you said you were ready to publish an evaluation of it. So for my home theater system, I'm looking at an Onkyo. And I
yeah, well, you know, I'm in a good position now because I have two home theater systems. Upstairs is a Denon system. I bought the Onkyo about a year ago. And then when I set up a second system, I bought a Denon because I thought, well, I'd like to compare them. And I love the Onkyo. I think I bought the 616, I want to say. It was fairly inexpensive for an AV receiver. It had some nice features, 7 HDMI ports in, 2 out. So it was very good for that reason. It meant that I could drive both my projector screen and my big screen TV with it. It does a lot of the features that I want, and it's right now it's $386 on Amazon, which is puts it in kind of the mid range for AV receivers. I wouldn't want to spend a whole lot less. Drives speakers very well. The sound quality is excellent. In fact, I would say nowadays sound quality is probably not an issue. There are some things I don't like. You know, they promote the fact that it supports, you know, Pandora and Spotify and stuff like that, but it's very slow to get to it. They don't have a very fast processor in it. But in most cases, you probably don't care because you're going to use something else to get to those. I use a Sonos, for instance. I'm much happier with that. Sound quality is excellent. They do have an app that works quite well to control it as a remote control. I'll talk a little more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You want to fly with the eagles instead of hanging out with the pigeons like I did? This is the guy to do it for you. Johnny Jett joins us. Johnny, I haven't seen you in ages.
It's been way too long.
Johnny is my personal travel expert at johnnyjett.com. How many miles you said you traveled last month?
Actually, I did 45,000 miles in October, which was a lot.
And you're doing that to write stuff for johnnyjett.com.
I am. Actually, wow. One of those trips was for my honeymoon.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
So where does Johnny Jett go for his honeymoon? Bali.
I went to Seoul. I flew Korean Air to Seoul. Then we went to Bali. And then I had to be in Darwin, Australia a week later. And it killed me because I was an hour and a half away by plane. And I had to go all the way back to New York for a meeting.
Oh.
So that's why I flew so many miles.
And your new wife is Heather?
No, but Natalie. That sounds interesting.
Natalie.
It's Natalie.
Natalie. That's right.
Luckily, I don't know a Heather.
No, Natalie would be mad at me.
Oh, she's watching right now, I'm sure.
Congratulations, Natalie. Congratulations to you, Johnny. You did well. I don't understand what Natalie's up to, but that's... No. She gets to travel. So,
she does.
So as long as I've known you, you've really been an expert. I've known him for years. I think maybe 10 years now we've known each other. You've always been an expert in getting great travel deals. And I look at you and I just shake my head because I always pay more.
Because it takes time. That's the big thing. People don't want to spend time. And another reason is they don't want to be flexible. The key to saving money is being flexible.
So if you say, I have to travel on November 21st, it's just not going to work as well as if you say somewhere in that week. How flexible?
Right. Like, let's say you're going away for Christmas. Yeah. Everyone wants to go away the Friday before Christmas or the Saturday before.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a deal those days.
No, those are the most expensive days of the year, probably.
Yeah, you might get a deal Friday morning, early morning, but everyone wants to leave after work or after school, and there's no reason for the airlines to give you a deal. All the planes are full. Right. So you got to go when other people aren't going.
So, but now the airlines have gotten very smart. They don't fly empty seats anymore. I mean, it used to be you'd get on a plane, it'd be mostly empty.
Well, they consolidated. That's why. They were losing so much money, and they just started consolidating. They cut back a lot of different routes and service and planes. So they parked them in the desert, and now that's why you have full flights.
Right. And they're also using computers to do the fares so that they can really maximize. They don't want to fly with an empty seat.
No, now if I owned the airline, I wouldn't want it either. And you
no,
the same with.
I understand. So how can we? But how can we take advantage of that knowledge?
But there's still ways around it. Again, if you're not flexible, you can just, you know, you can turn off your computer right now because you're not going to get a deal. You got to be flexible.
Okay.
So what I do when I go find an airfare, you know, obviously, first of all, I'll go to johnnyjet.com and we have a cool search engine.
Okay, so you don't go particularly to Orbitz or at Travelocity or Expedia.
Well, there's not one website out there that has the cheapest fare.
There's not. I mean, they don't even have all the fares. I mean, no. Southwest only sells through Southwest, right?
Sure. You got to go to Southwest for those.
Right.
But, you know, again, you have to check Expedia, TripAdvisor, Kayak, Fly.com, all these different ones. And actually, that's why I created this one search engine on Johnny Jet, where you actually just put in your cities and dates and your times. Actually, you don't even put the time in.
Is this in the travel portal here?
Actually, right on the homepage, right to the right of it, you'll see a little flight search. We don't make it so big as we used to.
Oh, okay. All right.
So you just put in your city pairs and your dates. And then you check which sites you want to see. And you want to check them all. And then all of a sudden, all these windows will open up and you can compare. And that way, you don't have to keep going to each individual site and putting in the city pairs and the dates.
Now, I do put in a date here, but you're saying be flexible.
No, but you definitely want to put the date in.
Okay.
So if you know when you want to go.
Okay.
So let's say when you don't know when you want to go, I like using ITA software.
This is the company Google bought.
Exactly, for like $1 billion.
Yeah.
And you can't book on ITA software, but what I like to use is their flexible search. So you can put in, you know, your city pairs and say, okay, start looking on December 1st, and it will give you, you know, 60 days worth of travel dates, and it'll show you which day is the actual cheapest day to fly. Then you click it and go inside of it, and it'll show you which airline is actually offering that fare. And there could be multiple ones.
So they're not selling here. This is Google
pure
style. Pure search engine. It's itasoftware.com.
Okay. It's going to be interesting to see what Google does with it. Because right now, I love their flexible flight search.
So I was going to ask you, should I use Hipmunk? I love Hipmunk or Kayak.
Hipmunk's great. You got to use them all. You got to check them out. That's why you have to try them all. And again, that's why I first start off with my search engine, because I can hit six right away.
Right.
And those are not necessarily are going to be the cheapest, those six. So you got to check the other ones as well.
So I entered in on this johnnyjet.com. I entered in a flight, and you opened for me. Now, a bunch of windows. You've got Expedia, Fly.com, which is cheap flights.
Actually travel to Fly.com.
TripAdvisor, DealBase, Kayak. You opened a bunch of stuff for me.
Yep.
But that's still not going to get everything.
It's not going to get it all. So, and again, Southwest won't show up on any of these.
Right.
So you got to go to Southwest if you want to fly Southwest. One thing that's nice about Southwest is they don't charge for your first two bags.
Yeah.
So you got to keep in mind, if you know, I assume you don't check bags. I mean, most people who know how to travel don't check bags unless you really have to.
Johnny, I check bags on this cruise, I actually paid for a second bag on United.
Oh,
it was expensive too.
Yeah. Okay, if you're flying domestically, ship your bags 5 days ahead of time.
Go to UPS.
Yes, FedEx or the mail, but use Ground.
Right.
That way, when you land at these different places, you can use public transportation. So you don't have to wait around for your bag to come out, if it even does come out. And then you can just hop on. Like when I fly to New York, you know, I just walk right off the plane and walk right to the air train and take the subway into the city. It costs $7.25.
This is one of my big gripes, though, by the way, is that everybody now is doing this. So when you get on a plane, people are trying to jam all their luggage into the overhead compartment. It's a fight.
I know. That's one reason why you got to get on the plane early. So you need to be on the first or second or third boarding zone.
How do you do that? Is there a secret to that?
Well, you can pay money or become a frequent flyer in that program, or you can buy one of their credit cards. A lot of these different airlines will offer that perk if you buy their credit card.
So the problem is, though, you just said flexibility is important. The ability, if you're going to get the lowest fare, you've got to be able to fly any airline. You can't be loyal.
I'm not loyal.
Yeah.
I used to be only to United. I used to be 1K on United, and I would actually fly to Denver to get to Albuquerque instead of taking the nonstop from L.A. on Southwest, just so I could get my miles.
Yeah, and I don't think that miles is all that valuable because they're not.
Especially Delta. They have the worst.
Who's got the best loyalty program?
you know, it's all debatable. It depends on where you live. But
right.
for me, I used American and United. I can usually find a seat on those.
Well, once Continental and United joined, I think the United program got better, right?
I don't know. It used to be better in the old days.
Yeah, they did. Everything was better in the old days, Johnny. You're getting old enough. You're learning that. It was always better in the old days. So I did a search to fly to Paris, France, I think in 2 weeks, even though I'm not going. I thought this would be fun. And now I've got a whole bunch. You know, the fare is $1,500 there. It's $14. The fares look, well, here's $1,000. They look pretty similar.
Okay.
So how do I get the best fare?
Okay. So another trick is, which is not very techie, you call either a travel agent or you
really?
Call the airline or you call the airline themselves. Yeah, some travel agents have some tricks up their sleeve.
They're not out of business. They really do offer something.
The good ones are still in business. The ones that were just writing tickets are out of business.
So in a way, this is good, this so-called disintermediation the internet has
for
brought.
Sure.
Because it's
for sure.
the ones who are just, you know, doing what you would do online, they're not at work anymore.
Yeah. For example, one time I was flying London to Bangkok, and everything online was showing $1,000 for a one-way coach ticket.
Right.
I called my travel agent. He said, there's a flight to Abu Dhabi, and you can spend a night for $25 extra. And it's $550.
So Johnny Jett, great to talk to you. JohnnyJett.com. Come back soon, all right?
All right,
I want to do this on a regular basis. All right.
All right.
Leo LaPorte, the tech guy on the radio. Stamps is awesome. If you do a lot of mailing, you're going to want to try Stamps.com. And I got a special deal for you coming up here in just a second. The key on Stamps.com is, look, if you just mail a letter a day or a letter a month, it's probably not what you want. But if you want to be a pro in the postal division, if you're an eBay or an Amazon seller, you sell on PayPal or you sell on Etsy, and if you're doing fulfillment of any kind, if you're sending out invoices, if you're sending out notices, newsletters, then you don't want to be the person in line at the post office, especially during the holidays. Crazy. That's amateur hour. That's when the amateurs, I'm going to send out Christmas cards once a year, people show up. No. Stamps.com is for the pro, the person who does mailing. It lets you click, print, and mail U.S. postage. You can mail internationally as well, by the way. They do that, the international forms. You get the digital scale. Oh, they've updated the digital scale. Look at it. It's new. I want that new one. Sweet. So you plop the letter or package on there. It prints out exactly the right postage. Prints right on an envelope if you want. It's a shipping solution is what it is. Now, 2 billion folks have sent letters and packages using Stamps.com. Well, no, that doesn't make sense. 2 billion letters and packages have been sent. I don't know how many people that is. Here's the deal. Click the radio microphone in the upper right-hand corner and write Tech Guy for the best deal. That $80 bonus offer? Nope, $110. $55 in postage. Free digital scale. $5 supply kit and a 4-week trial. We still have the old scale picture on here, but I think you get the new scale. I'm sure you do. Can we get the scale picture updated? And who's this old guy? Get the old guy updated, too. Stamps.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY for a great bonus offer. Be a shipping pro. Never go to the post office again with Stamps.com. Tech Guy Show, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. We ran out of time with Johnny Jett, but I'm going to get him back. One of the things he said, you didn't let me tell you all the, there's other, he says, follow all the airlines on, Dick DiBartolo's here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He is also a fan of travel. In fact, Dick came out to visit us last week just because he wanted to fly the new 787 Dreamliner.
Yeah, I did.
Johnny Jett has a tour of the Dreamliner on his webpage, johnnyjett.com. He just did a tour of it. And he says, follow all of these guys on Twitter because all the airlines will do specials on Twitter. And subscribe to the newsletters, too. He says there's a bunch of newsletters. Johnny has some free newsletters, travel deals, daily travel tips, things like that. JohnnyJett.com. And we'll get Johnny back soon because anybody who likes to travel, as I do, wants to know how you use these magic internet tools to get better deals, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dick is loves. He's. Oh, you're. I don't think you've traveled economy class in years.
Fortunately, no.
Because you use, but you use miles. You don't pay for it. You use miles.
No, I use miles. And, but sometimes, like with the Dreamliner, if you're platinum elite, you can buy a B economy ticket, which is still pricey, $1,700. But they will write it in first class. If you actually bought it as a first class ticket, it's $3,800.
Oh, so it's half price third class.
Yeah, it's half price.
Yeah. So you're a traveler. I know that because I know because you've taken like one extra flight just to keep your platinum.
Yes,
status.
That was part of this.
Anybody who and does flew, that.
Yes, and I flew through Houston, so that counts as another segment.
That's what Johnny Jett said. Yeah, anybody does that kind of stuff, that's hardcore. Dick is also a gadget hound, and you can
when
find...
When did that start?
I don't know, but I'm glad you are. Gizwiz.biz is his website, and he's... Maybe you know the name, Dick DiBartolo. I know I did. A little thrill went down my spine the first time I heard that name. I said, that's one of Mad's writers. That's one of Mad's maddest writers. That is Mad's maddest writer. So for Mad Magazine, and by the way, thank you. Dick gave me 60 years of Mad, the 60 years compilation. That's such a beautiful coffee table.
Yeah, that is a well-done book. I make no money from it, so I'm just saying that as an observer. It is beautifully put together.
But he joins us every week to talk about gadgets. That's his specialité.
And yeah, well, the gadget today is also the other reason I flew out is because in June I talked about the iFrogs Boost, the little unit that, you know, audio from your phone and your PDA is real crappy. So this is a way to make the audio better. So we talked about the iFrogs Boost, and then I had just gotten the iFrogs Boost Plus. And I figured, you know, I'll just get on a plane and fly to Petaluma. Well, San Francisco. I could not get the Dreamliner to land in Petaluma. He kept saying,
our airport
said,
is on, a little
I'm an elite
small.
Flyer. I'm an elite flyer.
Can you just drop me off? Give me a parachute. Open a door. Just drop me off. I wish they would do that.
Yeah, I would. I would, too.
Yeah.
So anyway, the iFrogs Boost Plus. This is, again... You were sort of astounding yourself. It's called Near Field Audio. And all you do is you get your tune going on your phone or your PDA. You put the little speaker on your phone facing the blue pilot light on the unit. And then it amplifies the music. Now, it's not, you know, the ad says room filling. Well, it can be loud and it's not room filling. But if you travel... And you're in a hotel room or something, and you want to listen. You, Leo, I think you said this would be great for audio books.
Yeah, I mean the music fidelity is okay. It's not great.
It's okay. No, absolutely.
But for voice, it would be fantastic. It was surprisingly loud.
I mean, and like I said, this is great when you travel. You want a little bit of room in the music in the room. Now you have to also decide. The Boost Plus has three speakers. The regular iFrogs Boost has just two speakers, but there is right now a huge price difference. The Plus just came out at $60. The plain Boost is now retailing on Amazon for about $28. So you have to decide if you want to spend the extra money. And both of them come with an audio cable. You can also plug it directly in from the headphone jack to audio in on either the Boost or the Boost Plus.
It's kind of cool. I mean...
No syncing, no Bluetooth, no nothing.
There are a couple of different ways to do this. I use... you gave it to me, the Jawbone Jambox.
That was Bluetooth,
that's
right?
Bluetooth. It's a little bit better audio, but at least there's no wires. So I attach that to my phone, and I can leave the phone and walk around with a speaker, and that's great for my audiobooks, too.
Yeah.
And now there's the giant... It's too big. The giant Jambox... Is like a suitcase. It's too big.
Oh, yeah, but that's like $300, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it's much more expensive.
$200.
Yeah, and these are expensive solutions compared to the Boost. And then there's also one Logitech makes one that is kind of cool. Same idea, Bluetooth audio. But there's nothing in this price range. So the Boost is list $40. You can get it for less on Amazon. And the Boost Plus lists $60. From
and
iFrogs
hasn't
with
quite
a Z.
started discounting yet since it's new.
Yeah, iFrogs with a Z. IFROGZ. Dick is at gizwiz.biz. Three Z's.
Also with a Z.
Yeah, triple Z. gizwiz.biz. That's where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest. And today, it's it looks like a Hobbit bow and arrow, I think.
Mm-hmm. I can only give you a...
So go to gizwiz.biz. That, by the way, is where all his gadgets show up, so you can find out more about the boost there. And then click the What the Heck Is It contest. There is a picture of something. If you can name it... Well, now, here's the deal. You don't have to get it right. In fact, there's only 12 autographed magazines for the right answer. There's 24 for the wrong answer, so you get the idea. We want the cute, silly answers. You'll be playing for the February 2013 issue of Mad, and you have till the end of December to get your entry in. All the details are at gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dick.
Thank you, sir. I'll
stick around. GizFizz is coming up right after the radio show, and Dick, of course, does a gadget podcast with me on our Twit Network each and every Tuesday, 1 p.m. I'm sorry, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv.
I'll be there.
Yeah, you better. It's really boring when you don't show up. Blackie in California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Blackie.
Hi, good afternoon, Leo. Thank you for taking the call. I'll cut right to the chase. I live at the kind of the edge. The flat, my flat mappers might call it right before you fall off the edge.
Okay. And oh, I like Tehachapi, a beautiful area.
We enjoy it.
Yeah.
We live just off the, no, we're not off the grid, but just out of reach from DSL Extreme, which I'd love to have. And so our alleged high-speed internet comes in via radio signal from a directional antenna on the roof up to a mountaintop. And it's better than dial-up, certainly, but it's no great shape.
It's not satellite. It's is it some sort of, is it microwave?
It's almost in the microwave band. It is not deep space, Hughes, blue,
right.
Whatever they call.
The issue on because I know you want to do it with VoIP. The issue is latency, not necessarily bandwidth here, but ping time and latency. Sometimes it's called jitter, and that kills voice over the internet because, well, you've seen it on CNN where they stop talking and 3 seconds later the correspondent picks up the cue. That's latency. That's the delay it takes for the signal to get out. And sometimes on systems like this, you get some severe jitter or latency. You can go to speedtest.net and then pingtest.net. These are two websites that will give you some idea of how your bandwidth is. For Skype, which is my favorite voice over the internet solution, you need ping times under, I would say, under 200 or 300 milliseconds to really make it be viable. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.